Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Ann Ortley calling in to report on the weekly weather for the week of March 30th, 2009. I'm sitting here at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side, and I'm ready to let you know what's going on. First up, there's going to be a lot of reveals over the next few weeks. Reveals are when the part of the story that you didn't have yet comes to light. The crucial hidden fact. That pivotal part of the data that makes you go, oh, that is what's going on. The steps in the process you didn't know about and now you have to take to get what you want. The elementary, my dear Watson, elementary moment. Well, it may have been elementary to them, but it wasn't elementary to you. You're the one who figures it out over the next few weeks. And then it will be elementary to you too. When the reveal comes to light, you'll have an aha moment. After the aha moment, you actually know what you want to do. The doing, of course, will take a bit of time and will be done down the road. But starting this week and going until April 15th, you will come to know. Or at least, you'll see it for what it is. You'll understand why things are the way they are. You're going to gather the clues and put them together, like Sherlock Holmes and Watson did. There's going to be a lot of indecisions and delays and obfuscations and cloudiness and craziness that's going to clear up in the next 3 weeks ahead. You're going to get crystal clear and you're going to see things as if for the first time, with fresh new eyes, as if the scales covering your eyes fall away. I'm reminded of Saul's conversion on the road to Damascus. We're each going to have our very own road to Damascus conversion over the next 3 weeks. Like Saul, we may be blinded a bit by our conversion's effects and the information we receive, and that's going to be this week's part of the journey. After we get used to our conversion and being blinded, we'll figure out what to do about it, which is next week's part of the journey. And finally, the scales will fall from our eyes, which is the third week's part of the journey. For those of you who don't know about Saul's conversion story, he was a Pharisee, or a learned teacher, who violently persecuted the followers of Jesus shortly after Christ was crucified. His conversion experience was described a number of times in the Bible, and universally described as miraculous, supernatural, or revelatory in nature. So from the Acts of the Apostles, I quote, "As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from the heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' 'Who are you, Lord?' Saul asked. 'I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting,' he replied. 'Now get up and go into the city, and you'll be told what you must do.' The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless." I can kind of appreciate I'd probably be a little speechless, too. "They heard the sound, but they didn't see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. In Damascus there was a disciple called Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision, 'Ananias?' 'Yes, Lord,' he answered. The Lord told him, 'Go to the house of Judas on the straight street and ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. In a vision he has seen a man named Ananias come and place his hands on him to restore his sight.' 'Lord,' Ananias, I'm not sure I'm saying that guy's name's right, answered, 'I've heard many reports about this man and all the harm he's done to your saints in Jerusalem. And he's come here with authority from the chief priests to arrest all who call on your name.' But the Lord said to Ananias, 'Go. This man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name.' Then Ananias," 5 or 6 different versions of how to say his name there, "went to the house and entered it. Placing his hands on Saul, he said, 'Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here, has sent me so that you may see again and be filled with the Holy Spirit.' Immediately, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he could see again. He got up and was baptized, and after taking some food, he regained his strength." That's from the Acts of the Apostles in the New Testament. Verses 9, 3 to 19. Pretty dramatic stuff, I know. Bright light comes out of the heavens, knocks you off your horse, a voice yells at you and tells you to stop persecuting it, you're blinded, no eating or drinking for 3 days, Then some guy with a strange name, which I can't say, comes by and lays hands on you, and the scales fall from your eyes so you can see again. You get baptized, get a new name, regain your strength, and it's all going to be an interesting patch of time. You might have all those things happen, but the purpose, you might not have all those things happen, and you might have all those things happen. But the purpose of the next patch of time is to have you see things that you've never seen before. After you see them, and perhaps spend a few days blinded or not eating and drinking, the scales will fall from your eyes and you'll get it, whatever it is in your life, in a way you never got it before. That's the scenario for the next section of energy we're going to be working with over the next few weeks. As Venus finishes her retrograde station, Pluto stations, and Mars visits with Saturn and Uranus. Mars to Saturn takes place this week. Knocked off your horse as Pluto draws to a stop in the sky. Mars to Uranus takes place on April 15th when the scales fall from your eyes and you start a whole new two-year cycle. The time in between is really what's going to be interesting, and that's what's happening now. Mercury is exceptionally busy this week, bringing you all sorts of information and new ideas. Juno, the planet of marriage and partnership, changes signs and enters Pisces, asking you to partner with your soul and your soul's hopes or dreams. It's going to be another busy, busy week, and it builds to a crescendo as we approach the week's end when Mars is opposite to Saturn and Pluto stops in the sky to go retrograde. On Monday, or the Moon's Day, Mercury is busy on the same day that the Moon is in Gemini, making it a big communication day for all of us. Watch for messages you didn't expect or don't quite know what to do with. Gather the data. Don't be afraid to ask questions. The person may bark at you impatiently. Ask your questions anyway, especially if you don't understand what is being asked of you. Mercury is in Aries, so communications are pioneering, executive, competitive, impulsive, eager, courageous, independent, and dynamic. People can be very sharp-tongued. Or they can assume you know about the situation when they call to complain to you. Or they're just moving fast and leaving steps out. There is a lovely opportunity for miscommunication as Mercury is talking to Neptune. You might not completely hear correctly, or they might not speak correctly. Double-check all communications. Mercury and Sun join, so communications are combust, the ego or the solar purpose for existing. People will want what they want immediately. Details are ignored in the face of bold, adventurous, spontaneous, and direct actions. Move or be run over. Be aware that your words may come across as extra sharp, too. So caution on the tone and the content. On Tuesday, Moon in Gemini has a lot of aspects while you're sleeping, making for a busy night of dreams. Remember, this is recorded for East Coast of America people, so you folks in Australia, you're just going to have a busy day. Once you wake up, Mercury, he's in the mood to organize your home, office, or work area and settle up and clean up that Vesta environment that you feel safe and cozy in. Sun follows up with a sense of well-being at the end of the day, content with the work that Mercury accomplished earlier in the day. Moon has a crabby aspect with Saturn, so you can feel blocked or thwarted or given a big no. No worries, you get a yes at the end of the day when the Moon trines Jupiter in Aquarius. Think big picture and not little skirmishes. The no was a skirmish. Watch for the yes that comes right behind it. Wednesday is April Fool's Day, so watch for practical jokes. The Moon is void in the morning, offering us an opportunity to wrap up some of the tasks from the busy, busy Monday, Tuesday. All sorts of communications get a boost if you detach from the outcome. Kind of watch it from a third perspective. Imagine you were riding along with Saul as the light came down and you watched the conversion happen. Maybe you were supposed to be the light for someone else and help them have their aha moment. Or perhaps the light comes down on you today. Mercury is getting spoken to and will take actions based on what is said. Moon in Cancer sets off those Aries planets and squares Pluto, forming a T-square, fast-moving one, but still a T-square. Those are always volatile. So the source of our habits is our early conditioning or our karma. While it might feel emotionally threatening, it actually is a good thing. Just kind of sit in the energy, be calm. Venus, with her quick, expressive, and self-interested outlook, initiates a direct and straightforward conversation with connections, community, and some larger principle of relating. Ask so you can get. Go ahead, ask. Quick, quick. Come on, ask. Thursday, we find the Cancer Moon continuing her journey and waking up the Sun and the Mercury with her emotions and anxieties. This can either be a very good or quite a difficult day. It depends on where you are and what you're focusing on. It can, and probably will, swing back and forth between two polarities, very good or very bad. It's one of those days, guys, you know, where you kind of want to go, oh, man, is it a good minute or a bad minute? The pressure builds as Mars approaches his fight with Saturn and Pluto. As Mars approaches his fight with Saturn and Pluto comes to a stop in the sky. Cancer Moon carries the message from her square to Pluto yesterday to the rest of the personal planets. Thrum, thrum, the pressure builds. Moon sends a bit of extra emotional energy to Saturn and Mars as the two of them get ready to fight over the weekend. You're fighting over old tribal issues. We each have a belief system that we get from our family and religion or our childhood that we don't question. Those beliefs live in us inside, setting the stage and guiding our behavior. Often they're unconscious, and we're unaware of their potency as they guide us. That may be what you have your conversion on the road to Damascus for, or about, your beliefs. You're going to become conscious of what that belief of yours is and how it works, and how it causes you problems, too, not to forget that. Sun offers you an opportunity to see things in a way you never have before. Don't be afraid to look. Mercury is joined to Uranus by declination, encouraging you to take a risk, get knocked off your horse, fall to the ground, shocked. You'll have to adjust your old beliefs today or risk losing something very important to you. You might have to adjust how you do things or risk losing it something, period. Make sure to adjust. Please adjust. Don't be rigid. Friday offers lots of tension and drama, as the moon in Cancer void most of the day offers us the ability to not be grounded in reality, and a number of aspects push us on to evolve. Mars is feeling blocked and held back as he powers up to his opposition to Saturn. Pluto stops. You can push or you can wait until the energy clears. Venus squares Pluto first thing in the morning, starting us off with the energy of transformation and change. This is their second square, so think back to February 5th, 2009, to see what the beginning part of the story was. The square of Pluto to Venus to Pluto, part 3, will finish the story up on May 2nd. Okay, so right now we're in the middle part of the square, the transition phase, as we call it, as astrologers. Venus squared has stopped Pluto, pushes us to really clarify what it is we want and why we're doing it. If the behavior isn't getting you what you want, you have to change your behavior. Mercury is talking with Jupiter, so you might hear God's voice shouting at you like Saul did on the road to Damascus. Or maybe not God shouting, but someone shouting. It's a clearing and a cleansing opportunity. Mars in Pisces has an aspect of brilliance to Pluto. Take advantage of triangles to advance your strategy or move yourself forward. Again, you have an opportunity to get off the rock and evolve. Triangles are particularly potent today to help you get things done, so definitively open up things to invite in other helpful and transformative people. Remember, Pluto works in triangles, so two against one is a bad triangle. Inviting all three components of the triangle into the room in the conversation makes it work much better. On Saturn's day, we find Pluto stopped dead in the sky, grinding us into a new reality. He's going to go back to zero in August. So forward motion on the economy and wherever he is in your chart by house essentially stops today as we revisit those areas requiring changes. So we go back to late November and revisit the issues from that time over the next few months. Mars is quintile to Vesta, so the dreams of last night are vibrating in your being. Mercury gets a great idea from the dreams, too. Ideas and communications are seeking to partner and work effectively with the bigger picture and expand how you are in connection to the world. Mars opposes Saturn, so you could hear shocking news today that you didn't anticipate, news that knocks you off your horse and renders you blind as Mercury links up with Neptune. Juno enters Pisces, so it says to work with your other senses and partner with your soul. That is why God knocked Saul off his horse. Partner with your higher version or vision of life. Enough of justifying why you have to suffer. Now is the time to evolve or be blind forever. Sunday, finds, ruled by the sun, finds itself arguing with Saturn as the moon argues with your sense of well-being and safety. You have to adjust now. If you find yourself blinded by the experiences of the past week, please know it's a temporary condition to, one, make you appreciate your eyes, and two, help you see clearly. Often, we only see things clearly when we are faced with losing them. Why we wait until the moment of loss and fail to appreciate what we have when we have it is a mystery tied to our deeper being and our soul's connection. I've always wondered about that one. You have a thought, or if I ruled the world, I would change things. You have a thought or idea that is brilliant today. Make a plan to act upon it if you can. How can you shine even as your life is changing? You can shine by knowing that over the next few weeks you'll be figuring it out. You can shine by learning to love the questions and the not knowing. You can shine by spending time doing and loving the things you love to do. Now, the mundane section is my personal favorite, so I'm kind of looking forward to reading this part out loud. The mundane section is mundane astrology. So what mundane astrology is it's the astrology of the world. And as we live in our lives, we watch around and we notice what's going on in the world around us, and it correlates to the planets. And it also correlates to our lives. So my personal favorite for the week, mundane thing, is I love the Mount Redoubt volcano smoking up the skies in Alaska. It so fits the imagery. Fire Aries planets all square to stationing Pluto and Capricorn and Earth. So the top of that volcano should blow off this week as Pluto stations. Wee-haw! Are we all having or reviewing our doubts? Redoubt. The name of the mountain even fits Venus retrograde. If volcanoes are erupting in the world, there can be a volcano erupting in your life too, in your Capricorn or your Aries house. The Ann Arbor, Michigan News announced it would print its last issue in July. Since January 2008, when Pluto went into Capricorn for the first time, at least 120 U.S. newspapers have gone under, according to CNN. Pluto's entry into Capricorn lets us see and deeply know what Pluto in Sagittarius, the transformation of the publishing world, was all about. Venus retrograde and the bad economy has been great for the candy makers. Cadbury and Nestle posted double-digit profit gains. Sugar is ruled by Venus, as well as money. The stock market going up last week is temporary and emotionally based on Mr. Geithner's proposed plan to buy the toxic acids from the banks and investment houses. Even the curmudgeonly Republicans are excited. The Republicans can't help homeowners, but they can bail out the bankers. The stock market folks have been told the plan, and they are excited. That's why they're playing in the stock market again. They get to gamble again. Obama had banking CEOs down to the White House last week. He asked for regulations of their behavior. We'll see how that one goes. The problem is the CDO stuff is still unregulated, perfectly legal, and essentially a pile of crap, or a pile of toxic acids. So it's a bit like bailing out your teenage kids $100,000, yes, $100,000, not $10,000, we're talking big here, credit card bill, and letting him keep the card to go spend again. The banks are going to go run up the bills again. It's all still perfectly legal. Once we relieve them of the consequences of their very bad behavior by paying off their credit card bills, there is no thing that is going to stop them from going right back out and doing it again. The toxic asset buy-up isn't going to fly very far for a few reasons, I don't think at any rate. First, we're doing it under Venus retrograde. Venus rules money. The whole thing's going to shift, reverse change once Venus goes direct mid-April. Second, once the American taxpayer realizes what this is about, I expect significant pushback. We've not been told yet. If we got that irritated about a few million dollars of AIG bonuses, imagine trillions of taxpayer dollars to buy the toxic stuff. This might have worked before now. Now we're all paying attention, so I don't think it's going to fly. Third, we don't have enough money. This stuff is so leveraged, like 35-70%. And so out of control and so toxic, we will have to print so much money. If we buy the stuff, we'll have runaway inflation. Under the Bushies, we stopped publishing the M3, which is the amount of money in circulation. I imagine the upcoming summit will ask us to start publishing the M3 again. And when we do, well, it won't be pretty. We've been printing money and spending it like crazy with no way to pay it back. The U.S. government is like all those over-leveraged homeowners with adjustable-rate mortgages facing foreclosure. We do have the ability to print money, but eventually, if there is nothing to back it up, we have runaway inflation and have to admit we can't afford it. Fourth, the G20 summit takes place as Pluto stations on April 5th. Now, the G20 summit is a group of 20 countries that gets together to figure out what to do about the economy. And they met in November under George Bush, which I didn't put in the column, but that's the last time they met. And Barack Obama did not go to that meeting. Neither did John McCain. We have been selling these crappy CDO things all over the world. Have you wondered why the banks and AIG aren't telling us where they're spending our taxpayer money? It's because they're reimbursing all the big players that they screwed with these CDOs all over the world. This isn't like the money's going into the bank. What are they doing with it, people? They're handing it out to their friends around the world. So, at any rate, I get so excited about this stuff. From the Internet, Barack Obama faces a difficult balancing act at the International Summit in London to tackle the world economic crisis. In his first major trip abroad as president, Obama will have to tread cautiously in pressing the case for a global fiscal stimulus, while the European partners try to put the emphasis on revamping international financial regulations. The purpose of the April 2nd meeting is to coordinate strategy and actions among the group of 20 leading developed and emerging countries to come to grips with the worst economic crisis in decades. But it won't be easy to forge a united front. Here's a rundown on the differences, risks, and possible outcomes of the G20 summit meant to follow up on an initial round of emergency talks held in Washington in November. The April summit is shaping up as a tug-of-war over priorities. Washington has begun signaling that when the G20 leaders gather, the most pressing task should be to do more to boost their economies through spending programs like the $787 billion stimulus that Obama pushed through Congress last month. Top White House economic advisor Lauren Summers said there's an urgent need for more global demand, and that should take precedence over ironing out other problems. But the European Union finance ministers made clear they have no intention of increasing government spending beyond already announced plans. When Britain has backed the U.S. calls for stronger fiscal stimulus, Germany and the other countries are reluctant to build up more public debt to spend their way out of the recession. They are more interested in focusing on an overhaul of the international financial rules to prevent a repeat of the current crisis. In other words, they want to put this stuff under lock and key, which many blame on lax U.S. regulations. These CDOs were not regulated by anybody. It was such a Ponzi scheme. Although the new Democratic president agrees on the need for major reforms, he's not ready to commit to a detailed plan for reshaping the international regulatory order established at Bretton Woods conference after World War II. That was when they made the U.S. currency the big guy. We may not be the world currency anymore, people. The administration, preoccupied with domestic economic policymaking and other issues since taking office, wants more time to craft a fuller strategy. Another key factor, Washington has been wary of ceding power over markets to international regulators with the kind of cross-border powers that the Europeans are advocating. In other words, they want to watch our stuff. The biggest risk is that the summit participants will fail to produce a unified plan, which could disappoint a recession-weary world and further roil the global markets. Concern that the United States is moving too slowly to revive the world's biggest economy has weighed on the markets. And investors fear that without a clear agreement on the G20 on how to tackle the crisis, stocks could fall further. Alrighty. And then last but not least, people asked for a forum to ask questions, share, or comments. So I'm going to take a couple questions from the readers. Teresa asked, would you care to explain on what you said in Weekly Weather about the woman who noted there was a special karma involved when a mother is taken from young children? My carpool partner died in 2003 when her children were in the 5th and 8th grades, and I've often tried to figure out exactly what that could be about and how to help her children deal with the loss. My comment, the loss of a mother often shows as an affliction or difficult solar arc at a young age to the moon in a person's chart. The moon rules our body, personal physical creativity, sense of safety, nurture, home, as well as mom and apple pie. Creative people in whom we notice an abundance of creativity often lose their mothers at early ages, either due to death, physical, or emotional separation. The loss of the mother seems to combine with their life story to create an incubator that produces profound creativity during the course of their life. John Lennon, Picasso, Paul McCartney, Princess Diana, Prince William, Prince Harry, Gloria Steinem, Jane Fonda, Jack Nicholson, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, and Eric Clapton all come to mind as people who lost their mothers at a young age. Just this week, Nick Plath, the son of Sylvia Plath, hung himself at age 47 as all the planets in his chart came to semi-square all the planets that the other planets, and he reenacted the experience he had at an early age. From the internet, Nicholas Hughes, whose mother asphyxiated herself in 1963 by putting her head in a gas oven at her London home while her two children slept in the next room, hanged himself at his home in Alaska. His father wrote of how, after Plath's death, their son's eyes became wet jewels, the hardest substance of the purest pain, as I fed him in his high chair. Hughes was only a baby when his mother killed herself, and his father tried to shield his children from the intense public interest in the family. Some feminist groups blamed the death on Ted Hughes, who had left Plath for, another name I can't say, Acacia Weaviel, the wife of another poet. 6 years later, Weaviel gassed herself and their daughter, Shura, in an apparent copycat suicide. While the whole chart shows the karma of the person, afflictions to the lights, either the sun or the moon, often indicate a child had more challenging early life experience that marks him or her for the rest of their lives. Our early life experiences serve as an incubator for our soul's journey. We carry the marks and the actions, or the karma, the results of those marks and actions, forward with us. I don't believe there was a single conversation I had with my mother's mother, my maternal grandmother, where she didn't relate the story of her mother's death at age 52 when she was age 13. Her two maiden aunts came to live with and care for her family. My mother, her daughter, died at age 52 of the same disease as my great-grandmother. When I turned age 52, it was a stressful year. And my sister says she thinks she'll die at 52, and she's going to be 50 in a few months. Those marks are deep and strong. Amanda commented that you're starting to give me a complex about having Venus and Aries. Hunt 'em, hump 'em, and dump 'em. We have some good qualities. No worries. Venus and Aries is fabulous for accomplishing things, taking on challenging, getting stuff done, conquering the world. Plus, it doesn't have to hunt on the love side. Doesn't hurt to have it on the love side because you could get very bored very easily rather than blah, blah, blah. Plus, it doesn't hurt on the love side, except Venus and Aries can get bored easier than the rest of us do and leave sooner rather than later. Now, me personally, I have Venus in Scorpio, so I have difficulties leaving. You're probably noticing a bit of my shadow issues. How can they leave so fast? No long lingering goodbyes with those Venus and Aries. My Scorpio-Venus merges and keeps love well past the expiration date, even into stinky, while you've cleaned out the love refrigerator and gone shopping. Venus and Aries is difficult on the collective level as people fly off the handle, lose their social controls, and fight, and on the mundane level as we fight more about ourselves as countries. Lots more shouting and war things. Natasha Richardson had Venus and Aries. It was a great placement when the person uses it consciously. She was a brilliant actress and won awards and prizes for her Venus and Aries roles. Anna Christie got her Liam Neeson, Cabaret got her a Tony. It's difficult for those of us without Venus and Aries, natally, as Venus is going retrograde for 40 days. She's in Aries for February, March, April, and May. 1 month is fun, 4 months is hard. Mm-hmm. 4 months with the retrograde included is harder still. That said, this makes it a great time for you, as Venus is dancing with your Venus for 4 months, and a great time for all the Aries planets in all of our chart. It allows us to get a great deal accomplished and start a new eight-year cycle. Plus, you have fun having three Venus returns. We're all having three passes of Venus joining all our Aries planets below 15. So I think this is going to turn off, and I'm not 100% sure what happened. When it turns off, I'm going to keep reading, and it may stop broadcasting, so if it does, I say goodbye, and if it doesn't, and it keeps going, well, you know, it's experimenting. Other wonderful Aries qualities, pioneering, executive, competitive, impulsive, eager, courageous, independent. See, I'm being an Aries. I'm just keeping right on going. Dynamic, lives in the present, quick, individuality, expressive, begins things, interested, needs recognition, enjoys risks, martial, loud, metal, bodybuilding, vigor. Aries is such a fabulous sign. Ends things but overlooks the details. Starts things. Bold, adventurous, spontaneous, uncooperative, direct, extroverts, frank, uncomplicated. They're just wild and crazy people. What would we do without our Aries friends? So on this lovely new moon, or not lovely new moon, and the brand new week ahead, we each have an opportunity to really launch ourselves forward. And it says, show is on, but not streaming. Okay, so I'm going to keep going. What will we do without our Aries friends? The last letter was from Marilyn, who wrote, this new moon has created all kinds of fabulous opportunities for me and my Aries friends. For each of us, we've experienced the fury of the energies that preceded the new moon with answers and wishes and resolutions to very old situations, all coming to a head with this particular new moon. All of these were brought up and about by parties that were unrelated or seeming so to the old issues at hand. By their content, new life, freedom, and opportunities have exploded into the front line, breaking away all the previous limitations. Aries is fast, and that's just how all this came about. In the blink of an eye, life has never looked better. The squares to Pluto and Capricorn appears to have only served to bring to order what was once chaos, or at least it all looks that way for the moment. And my comment is that's the positive version of my suggestion to invoke the Pluto triangle energy for growth. The unrelated parties were Pluto acting as Saturn's wingman. Once the baby crowns, the rest of the birth process is fast and quick, slip sliding into your waking arms. And you Aries people always get to go first. In my next life, I'm coming back as an Aries. For the rest of you still laboring away, note the Aries excitement. You get your baby soon. And then Deborah wrote, I think there's a problem with your site. Someone left all the positive feedback totally out of it. I am sure there is someone who looks forward to sources of information that reflect tighter, 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 pressure, 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 darker, darker, darker. Although I seriously wonder why. And my comment is, we're having a volcano erupt in Alaska. When the volcano comes down, our lives come down. It should blow up the top by the end of the week and burble through the end of April, calming down by the end of May. Meanwhile, we're in the process of giving birth to ourselves. Tighter, tighter, tighter. Pressure, pressure, pressure. Darker, darker, darker. Dawn comes soon, but not just yet. If the darkness bothers you, skip my column for a few weeks and check back after mid-April. We are all in the final throes of giving birth to our new lives that are going to take shape over the next Pluto and Capricorn cycle of 16 years and Venus and Aries cycle of 8 years. Giving birth takes a bit of time and work. And while the Aries are there, the Aries people are there already, the rest of us are experiencing this transformation in other parts of our chart that are harder to work with and less in our control. And on a lighter note, Kay sent an article from the St. Petersburg Times. The business section asked readers for their ideas on how to fix the economy. Dear Mr. President, patriotic retirement. There are about 40 million people over 50 in the workforce. Pay them $1 million apiece severance pay with these stipulations. They leave their job. 40 million job openings, unemployment fixed. They buy new American cars. 40 million cars ordered, auto industry fixed. They either buy a house or pay off their mortgage. Housing crisis fixed. My comment, amen. So have a wonderful week. Have a great conversion on your road to Damascus. Remember to breathe. And I will check in with you next week. So take care. Be well. Goodbye.